Hey, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing students become more creative in the classroom. And so that's what this podcast is all about. And I want to talk about something today that is, I think, one of the key areas for creativity and innovation, but it's not talked about a lot. In fact, it becomes something that is usually talked about more in the academic settings, and I actually think that's kind of a tragedy. So I'm going to get into how action research sparks innovation and boosts creativity in the classroom. What happens when you give students exemplars? Do they simply copy the pre-existing examples? Do they fail to take creative risks? Do they internalize the idea that their work must fit into a previous model? Does it implicitly tell students this is what it should look like? Well, these questions were swirling around in my head before doing a student-centered blogging project a few years back. I decided to check out the research on risk aversion, creativity, and self-efficacy before planning out a simple experiment. With the first two classes, this is what I did. I had students look at exemplars from previous years and analyze what made the work outstanding. With the next two classes, we used blog examples from the real world and created a list of things that we liked and didn't like. Then with the last two classes, students simply began blogging without looking at the examples at all. The results were, well, kind of counterintuitive. It was not at all what I thought would happen. I expected the students who had looked at the exemplars to be more risk-averse. They would be afraid that theirs didn't turn out like the examples. I assumed they would simply copy the color, style, topic, and tone of the previous year's students. But that's not what happened. Students reported the highest blogging self-efficacy and the lowest risk aversion when they saw both the real world and previous student examples. But they reported the best level of creative risk-taking when they looked at fellow student examples. So the professional examples were one thing, but seeing student examples made the biggest difference. Now, when I interviewed students, I found that seeing a diverse set of examples freed them up to take things in their own direction. They needed to see proof that student choice really meant, well, student choice. But it also gave them something concrete to look at, a starting point that they could deviate from. And it was a reminder for me that we often move from consuming to creating in our creative work, and that's not a bad thing. But it left me with a ton of questions at the end. Did the types of exemplars I chose make a difference? Would they have done better if they simply left comments on student work rather than analyzing the strengths and weaknesses? Why were the results better when they looked at the student work rather than the real-world blogs? And what did it mean in terms of the implied message of mentor text? In other words, was it possible that giving them mentor texts that were too good was actually backfiring? Now, years later, I'm still asking these same questions. And every time I get closer to an answer, more questions rise up and more monkey wrenches are thrown into my previous theories and observations. But that is the beauty of discovery. It is inherently messy and human and nuanced. And here's the thing, teaching doesn't come with an instruction manual. It's something you learn through tons of tiny experiments. When my ELL students struggled with word problems, for example, in math, I started front-loading vocabulary in teaching academic language. When the results were disappointing, I began teaching verb tenses and realized that students struggled with passive voice and the past perfect progressive. This was something I'd never heard of before until I had begun to do research. And that's what this is really all about. Teachers are natural researchers. We are always asking questions, trying out new strategies, and seeing what works. It isn't formal research. We're not sitting back with a clipboard, observing subjects worrying about control groups or questioning the P score that you're going to have at the end. We are participating in the process. We are actively the participant and the researchers at the same time. And that is why I love action research. Now, I want to point out something if you're listening in the podcast right now. There's kind of a cool little diagram you might want to check out on the blog post that accompanies this. But also, if you go to my YouTube channel at spencervideos.com, you will find the video where I explain the action research process as well. So it's something you could share with your staff if you're an administrator. If you are a teacher, it's something you can share with your colleagues. And I've even seen people use action research with their students, which is kind of cool. So check out that video. But what is action research? Well, action research is a process, and it really gets down to the corner of what it means to be a teacher. See, teaching is a craft. It's both an art and a science, which is why great teachers always experiment and make tons of mistakes. But how do you know what's actually working? That's where action research comes in. Here you can identify a question or problem, test out a strategy, gather data, and determine if it works. The end result is something dynamic, innovative, and tied directly to your classroom. Action research dissolves the barrier between the participant and the researchers. In other words, the teacher's actively participating and conducting research at the same time, which I kind of mentioned before with the risk aversion action research that I did. Now, there's a lot of different action research frameworks, but they generally follow the same process. Phase one is the planning for research. It starts out with the inquiry process, where you define a specific research question. It needs to be something you can actually test. Next, you conduct a lit review to gain a deeper understanding of the related research. And finally, you move into the design process, where you can determine your data methods, consider ethical issues, get required permissions, create deadlines, and set up systems. Next, you move into the action phase. That's phase two. This is where you engage in multiple cycles of experimentation and data collection. And it's kind of these cycles going back and forth where you are collecting data and experimenting. Action data at the same time. Now, your data collection might be qualitative, like observations, artifacts, interviews, or it might be quantitative, like rubrics, surveys, achievement data, that kind of stuff. That will then propel you into phase three, which is analysis. You will often start by organizing data with charts or graphs and looking for trends. You might also discuss it with peers, free write in a journal, or create a cluster map before eventually writing your results out and kind of coming to the conclusion, which is the last phase in this cycle. And this is often where you will also share your research with the world and reflect on your own practice. This conclusion phase is going to lead to new questions, which I alluded to before. And that is what allows the cycle to continue year after year after year as you refine your craft and become a better, more creative teacher. Now, again, I think that this is something that really creates a climate of innovation in the teaching profession. It's easy to think of innovation as a result of bold visionaries who are doing drastically different work. But often there's a different type of innovation that happens in the classroom. It's humble. It's messy. It's what happens when you start with a question and then begin experimenting. It's what happens when you are open to new information and willing to take creative risks. Now, action research is what allows this process to happen. There's a lot of different things that can create creative risk-taking, innovation, that kind of stuff. But I think this is one of those things that is often overlooked. And so here are a couple of things in terms of what action research does. Action research starts with your own observations, experiments, and inquiry and continues through this entire process of discovery. Now, this discovery process encourages you to challenge the status quo, challenge your presuppositions, and ultimately create new strategies. So this curiosity fuels the creativity in action research, and that ultimately is what will spark innovation. Action research also respects the agency of the teacher by treating him or her like an expert, which, by the way, you are if you're a teacher. And you can figure out what works. Now, this is a contrast to the compliance-based systems where you wait to be told what to do. So the result of this is an empowered teacher who is ready to do something innovative and creative. Action research also encourages you to investigate other research in a way that is rooted deeply in your individual context. But as you move around, but as you move along, you share your results with your trusted colleagues, and if you're willing to, you share it with the world. Now, I found that I often don't share the entire action research, experiment, if you will, from start to finish. But what I will do is share the results or share what I've learned in a blog post. And I think that is something that can be potentially powerful for teachers. This can lead to creative breakthroughs that you can share with the larger teacher community. When it works best, you see transformation on both a local community level and on a global level. And again, something to think about that I think is important with this is, innovation doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be massive. It doesn't have to be something that seems so far out and groundbreaking. Often, it's the small things that lead to big changes in the long run. Action research also develops iterative thinking, which is where you're willing to make those little mistakes, learn from them, grow from them, and try something new. And this iterative thinking is one of the keystones to innovation. Now, in my experience, fear is one of the greatest barriers to both creativity and innovation. But action research is a process that allows and even encourages some mistakes. And this means teachers grow less averse to creative risk-taking. And as that happens, they become fearless, they become bold, they become courageous, and they become innovators. And ultimately, that's the part that's cool. Action research has this potential to spark innovation, boost creativity, and empower teachers to transform their classrooms. And that's pretty awesome. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Have a wonderful day. If you're up for it, if it's something that, if you enjoy this podcast at all, would you please leave a review on iTunes? That would mean the world to me to just hear how things are going. Let me know that you're listening. That would be a really cool little moment of encouragement. But more importantly, that's what allows people to find this podcast. So it helps us move up in the search rankings within iTunes. So again, I'd appreciate that. That would mean the world to me if you left a review.